Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's columnist and Albany bureau chief of the New York Daily News, the last man standing, Ken Lovett. Welcome back, Ken.
Good to be back.
Great to see you. So you had a very interesting column this week about how Andrew Cuomo is now, at least on paper, being pro-Senate Democrats. And we haven't seen anything like that for a while.
No, and it's funny that I would lead my column with that, and you would want to talk about that. A Democratic governor is supporting the Democratic takeover of the state Senate, and that's news. And you know what? It is news, because for 5-6 years, Andrew Cuomo has not done much to help the Democrats. As a matter of fact, most people think he was helping privately the Republicans, that he liked having them in control, that he helped them. He could get some stuff done on the liberal side, but he also helped them with the more fiscal conservative issues that he wanted to put forward. And so the arrangement worked for him. And now this year, he's feeling heat for the last year from the left of the Progressive Party. He's worried about another potential primary if he runs for re-election in 2018. And I think what you're seeing now is Cuomo is trying to shore up his left to make sure that perhaps there won't be a primary challenge.
And would he have to do more than just sort of give nominal support to two Democrats, Kaminsky and another fellow?
Well, he held a rally for two Democrats, and then he also was at a Suffolk County event, and he came out for a third, a guy, and this one was different because this guy, Gargan, I forget how you pronounce his name, but he's going up against an incumbent Republican, Carl Marcellino. Yeah. And it's the first time that the governor has actually come out full-throated in favor of someone against an incumbent Republican. Most people felt he was still hedging his bets. He's going out and speaking in favor of the Democrats. He gave five candidates the maximum $11,000 from his own campaign, but he hasn't sent a lot of more money to the state party that could then go toward the effort. People are waiting to see if that happens. But this was the first time he actually took on a Republican incumbent. So we'll see. I mean, there's a couple of weeks left. We'll see what he does. He's raising money for them. He's hosting a fundraiser on this past Tuesday in New York City. He's hosting a big fundraiser for the Senate Democrats. So certainly no one can accuse him this time around like they did 2 years ago of not helping the cause.
Well, there's helping the cause and there's helping the cause. If you give nominal help to a guy who's an incumbent and will probably win in a Hillary year and another guy, and go against Carl Marcellino, who comes from Long Island,
yes?
And Long Island is under a big cloud right now. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, well, Ed Mangano, the county executive and a Oyster Bay town supervisor, longtime town supervisor, John Venditto, who is the father of a state senator, Michael Venditto, who's a Republican, they were just indicted, a 13-count indicted, along with Mangano's wife, on felony corruption charges. It really is the latest scandal that has hit the once vaunted Republican machine, which at one time was the most powerful county Republican machine in the country. But now we've seen Dean Skelos toppled because of a corruption scandal. And now Ed Mangano, who, by the way, 2 years ago endorsed Governor Cuomo's reelection. He crossed party lines. Cuomo has a good relationship, a good working relationship with him. So the Republicans not only are contending with Trump and the meltdown that has happened with that campaign, the poll numbers seemingly on Long Island and other key areas have dropped for Trump, but on top of that, they're now dealing with a full-blown local corruption scandal.
Well, it seems to me Cuomo's got a few problems. Some of the people who have been his close to him, as you have just suggested, would apparently or allegedly be on the way to jail.
It has not been a good couple of months, and it has not been a good week for the governor. I mean, You know, we've talked a lot about the arrests of Joe Prococo, his former top aide, who was hit with federal corruption charges, along with nine other associates of the governor. Now you've got Mangano. You've got a lot of his upstate economic development projects that are being looked at and under federal scrutiny. And on top of that, his name's being dragged up in Bridgegate trial in New Jersey.
Yeah, let's go into that Bridgegate thing, because that's an interesting one, really is. If people have been following it, the question is, does Cuomo's name come up?
It does. David Wildstein, who was a top person to Chris Christie on the Port Authority Board, which is a bi-state agency. It's run jointly by appointees of the governors of New York and New Jersey. You know, Bridgegate was that Christie's people ordered the closure of lanes on the George Washington Bridge to create traffic chaos in Fort Lee, New Jersey, because supposedly the mayor of that city, a Democrat, wouldn't endorse Christie's reelection. So when that became public a couple of years ago, Cuomo was asked about it and denied any knowledge of it until it became public in the press. He said he never had discussed it with Chris Christie. Well, David Wildstein, who is testifying and who had pled guilty to other charges and a Christie guy, said that indeed that Christie and Cuomo hatched a plan where they would come up with a report that was a false report, and that Pat Foy, the executive director of the Port Authority, would approve that false report of what happened with the lane closures. And so he testified that. Cuomo immediately went on the offensive and said he's a liar. He's pled guilty to a felony. There's no reason to believe him. And in fact, the next day after he testified, Wildstein said he had no direct knowledge of those conversations, that he was told it, but not directly. Mm-hmm. So Cuomo went heavy. However, since Wildstein's testimony, a guy named Reckler, who was Cuomo's appointee to the Port Authority, said that the governor had spoken to Christie about it, and Christie was basically telling Cuomo to tell Pat Foy, the executive director, to lay off the issue, stop, you know, bringing it up, because Foy really was upset about this and was trying. He's the one who ordered the lanes reopened, and he wanted to go public. So he says that that's what happened. And now a third witness this week testified, yes, there were those conversations.
And there was an expletive used in that alleged testimony saying that the conversation between the two governors, Christie said something about, you better shut effing, something like that.
Yeah. Yes, and obviously Cuomo and Foy deny it. And Cuomo says the testimony actually shows, you know, that Foy was the good guy here trying to do the right thing. But what it also shows that Cuomo people aren't saying is that Cuomo misled the public about what he knew. Now, was Cuomo involved in shutting down the lanes? No, there's no evidence to that. But certainly he seemed to have been aware of it a lot earlier than he claimed to previously.
Ken Lovett of the Daily News. Hillary Clinton, according to all the polls, is trouncing Trump. You mentioned it earlier about Long Island. What are the implications? I mean, what does this mean in New York State?
Well, oddly, or not surprisingly, I should say, Donald Trump, who's from New York, had told his people at one point when they said, you know, after the primary, let's forget New York and focus on the other states. Trump said, I want to compete in New York. Show me how. So his New York team came up with a plan, you know, come in, do three appearances, do some fundraisers. We'll use the money from those fundraisers to do an ad campaign and all these other things. None of it happened. And now Siena came out with a poll this last week showing that Trump is losing to Clinton by 25 points, 25%. And now he's also losing where he was running tight or ahead in upstate and in the suburbs, including Long Island and Westchester.
Wow.
So the implications are, well, what's it going to mean for congressional races? We have some very close ones. We have, you know, in the Albany region, the Hudson Valley region, we have Zephyr Teachout, John Faso. It's a very close race. Will Trump's implosion in New York, you know, help Zephyr Teachout, the Democrat? We're going to see. But certainly Faso's got to be worried about that. We have a Claudia Tenney race in the Utica area, Utica to Binghamton. It's a three-way race involving Republican Claudia Tenney, who is a state assemblywoman. Is she going to be impacted by this? And certainly the question is, what kind of impact will it have on the state Senate races? Because
Absolutely.
It's so close right now. Will it mean more Democrats are elected on Long Island? You know, it used to be all nine Long Island seats were Republican until recently. Now you have one Democrat, Todd Kominsky, who took over Skelos' old seat after he had to resign because he was convicted. And now the question is, can the Democrats pick up more? Can they pick up some in the Hudson Valley? That's going to be interesting to see if there is a Trump effect, so to speak.
Many people don't follow this, but there's something called SUNY Poly. And this was run by a guy named Kelly Arrows. And he has been named in state and federal informations or indictments and is in real some real hot water. He said, OK, I'm going to resign as the head of this, although it was leaked that he was going over to Pennsylvania for a job interview over there. They would love to have all the good things he's done over here. But then he said, but I will stay on in my professorial role, tenured role, and that is, I believe the salary is about $800,000 there. This presents a problem for both the chancellor, Carl McCall, and Nancy Zimmer, the chairman of the SUNY board, Carl McCall, and the chancellor, Nancy Zimmer. What up?
Well, Calieros, you know, he saw the writing on the wall. They could fire him at any time as the president of SUNY Poly. And so before they did that, he preemptively resigned, but at the time in his resignation letter said he will return to a faculty position, which he is allowed under his contract.
And not only, I want to just interject, because I was a SUNY professor for 40 years. I can say I've seen a lot of presidents, when they're done being president for one reason or another, somebody whispered in their ear, they stay on, but they're not indicted.
But they're not indicted. And here, SUNY is looking for ways they can get rid of him as a professor. It's not as easy without a conviction. If there's a conviction, that makes it easier. But without a conviction, he's a tenured professor, and they have to go through a lengthy process if they want to get rid of him before the results of the trial. Now, you could argue that he's entitled to stay on. He hasn't been convicted of anything yet, but certainly SUNY knows what that looks like, and they're trying to find ways to get rid of him.
Kelly Arrows, of course, is an interesting character in that if you look at his motivations or his alleged motivations, one doesn't really see personal enrichment as you do with somebody like the allegations against Joe Prococo or Todd Howe, the governor's two closest pals, although they deny that Howe is as close as he is, trust me. Okay, so therefore, here's a guy who's built up this thing for the governor, this wonderful chip plant and all the rest of it, and it looks like he's got to take the rap the same way the personal enrichment guys do.
Well, the personal enrichment in this case, if what's alleged is true, and that's going to be proven, sure. But the personal enrichment would be that he was cozying up to governors. This is his fifth governor, Andrew Cuomo, and doing, you know, helping in this case, you know, some of the governor's donors and associates. And, you know, he stays on. As you said, he has a salary that's exorbitant. You know, he's making over $1 million, some say, you know, at least $700,000-$800,000. So he gets to keep that salary. Supposedly, the more business he brings in, he also gets some bonuses in that regard. So if that's the case, that's the personal enrichment. But you're right. I mean, for him, it's been more about the power of it and keeping in the good graces of those in power, whether they're in the legislature or the governor's office.
The challenger to Chuck Schumer, Wendy Long, says she'll tell President Trump to keep Pete Bharara on if he gets elected president. And here is Long saying that. Now, Long is losing in all of the polls by disastrous amounts from her perspective. But it was an interesting sort of Hail Mary pass, wasn't it?
Yeah, she's kind of doing that now. She's throwing out these kind of incendiary or at least headline-catching statements, hoping she can catch some lightning. But she's down by so much, and I think Schumer was at 68%, somewhere in that range, almost 70%, according to the last poll. And don't forget, she got trounced when she ran against Kirsten Gillibrand a couple of years ago. And by all indications, she's going to be trounced again now.
There is a prospect, and you've written about this, of a bill that would allow for recall of indicted politicians. In other words, it could be a recall election. States have this. I don't think it'll ever happen in New York State, but there's somewhat of a movement.
Yeah, the Senate Republicans and the Senate passed it this year overwhelmingly. The bill would allow for the public to petition for a recall vote if a elected official, whether it's a statewide official, a state lawmaker, or a local official, in this case, like County Executive Ed Mangano, if they're indicted on a felony charge, you can seek their removal, or if they're convicted of a misdemeanor charge. And those charges have to relate to their offices, sure, like Mangano's has. It passed the Senate overwhelmingly. It hasn't even been introduced, surprisingly, in the Assembly.
In the Democratic Assembly.
Right, but not even a Republican sponsor, which kind of surprised me.
Yeah. Airbnb. Now, I always have to do this, although it's just silliness. The Shartox, that's us, me and my wife, basically my wife, have a tiny little cottage on their land, and they do Airbnb there. I should say that because the governor has come and signed a bill which is going to make it much harder for people who have an extra room, an apartment, to make them into Airbnbs. This has gotten a lot of pushback from people who are making a couple of bucks, but also we've got some people who say, well, you know, not such a bad thing because there's a guy with an Airbnb in my apartment building, they're saying, and he messes everything up. They mess everything up, and we don't want them.
This is really about New York City and the power of the unions.
Yeah. And the hotels.
And the hotel and the hotel worker unions who led the charge for this bill. It's a first of the nation bill. And what the bill would do is, under a 2010 law, it's already illegal to rent out an apartment for less than 30 days in certain buildings. And really, you know, if you're not going to be there as a host, you can't rent it out. And so what this bill would do is it would make it illegal and impose fines of up to $7,500 per violation if you even advertise those units. So not only can you not rent it, but it's saying you can't advertise them because that's only, you know, encouraging illegal behavior. The hotel unions and the hotels were strongly behind this because they feel Airbnb is a threat to the money they take in. They say they don't pay taxes. And Airbnb has said we're willing to, you know, deal with issues and work on it. But the governor sided with the unions. He signed the bill on Friday. And now Airbnb immediately filed a lawsuit challenging it. And, you know, this is what they've done. They've run into regulatory problems all over the globe. And they've sued San Francisco, where they're based. They've sued Barcelona, Berlin. So, you know, they're a $30 billion company. And they're going to fight and try to keep this going, because especially for New York City, which is a major, major market for the company.
So now from the politics of Cuomo, you know, he bowed to the unions and to the hotel guys, obviously.
And the affordable housing people. Don't forget, that's right. A big issue. And they say Airbnb cuts into the affordable housing stock.
Because there'll be less apartments available,
yes,
and that kind of thing. But on the other hand, if you're some schmageggy who has an apartment somewhere and you're just getting by because you're renting a room in it or the apartment or part of the apartment out, you're never going to forgive Cuomo, are you?
Well, see, I don't know how much people are voting on this issue, to be honest, one way or the other. You know, I think it was a huge fight within the Albany confines, but I don't know how much it really has made its way into the public consciousness, and if there are enough Airbnb hosts that it would even impact, you know, the governor in the future. However, I had a story on Monday that this issue and that and the fact that the legislature blocked Uber and Lyft, you know, the ride-sharing, sure, companies from expanding upstate, the fact that they temporarily shut down FanDuel and DraftKings for a while until they had a deal. New York is quickly getting, according to some people in the tech industry, an anti-tech reputation, that they're sending a message that if you come to New York, you are going to face regulatory problems or even legal problems. And it's sending a message to some in the tech industry that New York is not the place to locate. Certainly, you know, the governor and the unions have denied that that's the result, that these are individual instances and there's a lot of tech companies. But that's what's being discussed now in the tech industry, that New York is not a place to come to.
You're a reporter, of course. You have to deal with the Cuomo people all the time. And a new press secretary. What's that? What is that signal?
Well, Danny Lever, John Kelly was the old press secretary or the most recent one. There's been several. And Kelly left. He really did. He has kids. He's in his 40s. He went to make money. He went to the private sector. Danny Lever has been there a couple of years. She's worked hard. In this particular case, I don't think it signals much. However, there's been another, you know, a spate of high-profile departures from the administration. That's more worrisome, I think, if you're the governor, that people are kind of starting to jump ship.
And
it almost has the end of a third-term feel to it.
Yeah. Speaking of which, will he run for a third term?
Too early to say. You know, remember those magic eight balls where he would shake it up, ask it a question? I think it would pop up too early to say. He says he's running. He's doing everything you would think he would do if he is running. He's trying to shore up his left. He's raising a lot of money. But we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know. His poll numbers right now are still solid. They're not amazing.
Well, they're solid, but may I just argue with you a little bit? They've come down.
No, they're not amazing. They're not stratospheric.
They were in the 70s. Now they're in the low 60s.
Right, but that's what he got elected on, too. But, you know, look, he just went through probably the worst month of his administration. And, you know, at least his favorability rating didn't really change much. In September, before all the arrests, he was at 57% favorability statewide. Now he's 56%. So whether people are paying attention, look, if he's indicted, obviously all bets are off. Depending what comes out at the trials, all this stuff could impact, you know, what he does in 2018. Right now, he's doing everything he could do to at least keep that possibility open. He's saying he's running again because that would weaken him if he said no.
Sure.
But I'm not convinced he will at this point.
You also have written about the Attorney General and firearms. And we have known for a long time people want to get a gun. They go south and they come back with a gun.
Or west, Ohio, the Midwest.
Sure.
Yeah, the Attorney General on Tuesday came out with a report, the first of its kind. It looked at 5 years worth of recovery data, guns that were recovered from, you know, from crimes. You know, person was arrested, they had this gun, it was used, and they analyzed the origins of the gun. And in the cases where they could find where the original sales were and where they went to, I think it was 74% of the firearms recovered in crimes between 2010 and the end of 2015 came from out of state. The bulk of those came from six states that are known as the Iron Pipeline, and then add in Ohio. So these guns, people are going down, they're getting them and they're bringing them back in, or people are, you know, buying guns with the intent of selling them on the black market, and that's what's happening.
Last, let me talk to you a little bit about, we all know that Andrew Cuomo has a reputation for not playing well with others. And we know that he and de Blasio have been having a really rough go of it, and that surrogates for Cuomo let de Blasio have it and the rest. But the one that I've always been kind of interested in is Tom DiNapoli, the state's comptroller. The reason I'm raising that with you is I know Tom DiNapoli, and I know him to be a wonderful man, very mild-mannered, doesn't look for trouble with anybody, and yet Cuomo can't stop fighting with him. What's the game?
This really dates back to when Andrew Cuomo was Attorney General Cuomo, before governor, when he was investigating a massive pay-to-play scandal within the comptroller's office under the previous comptroller, Alan Hevesy. Tom DiNapoli was not part of it. He really was letting, DiNapoli was running for election. He felt that DiNapoli was tied to Sheldon Silver, who helped get him appointed after Hevesy had to resign. Because
so everybody understands, when somebody has to get out, the assembly, you know.
The legislature.
Well, the legislature, but there are more Democratic votes than anything else. So that was his, you say, he suspected that DiNapoli was too close to Shelley Silver.
Right, and even at the time he started saying, you know, that DiNapoli isn't taking the scandals seriously enough in terms of how he's responding, and that maybe we should think about getting rid of, right now, the state comptroller is the sole trustee of one of the biggest pension funds, public pension funds in the world. Maybe there shouldn't be a sole trustee anymore. So he's always kind of poked at DiNapoli. You let him twist in the wind heading into the elections, and every so often it flares up. And so DiNapoli of late has come out with some negative audits about the governor's economic development programs, and, you know,
deservedly so.
Right.
I say.
I don't think the audits really surprised many people, but it infuriated the governor, and all of a sudden,
tough start.
The governor's Department of Finance, you know, basically came out with a report that trashed DiNapoli's oversight of the pension fund and his use of hedge funds and all these kinds.
Have
of
you
things.
Looked into that? Is there anything to it?
Well, look, I mean, DiNapoli is cutting back. What was in the report wasn't necessarily wrong, but the tone of it was surprising, and they really trashed DiNapoli. And more surprising was DiNapoli's response, which called it, he kind of took on the Cuomo persona, because Cuomo said this about DiNapoli's audits. DiNapoli said it was unprofessional, the report that came out from DFA, and just really trashed it personally as well.
Well, I personally believe he's right. I mean, I think this was just payback on Cuomo's part.
There's a longstanding tension and friction. He likes to bat around DiNapoli like a cat bats around a mouse.
I love it when Albany Bureau Chief of the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett, is on with us, because nobody knows more than he does. He's such a star. Our guest has been columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Ken, as always, we want to thank you for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Thanks.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.